Ladies and gentlemen, friends, and open-minded people wherever you live on Earth, today, again, we have on the very intelligent, brilliant analyst and actually scientist, chemist, Germer Rudolph, who gave us an incredible introduction yesterday to some of the birth rates and some of the impact and some of the reasons why that not only the German people, but European mankind faces a, you know, incredible, well, there's only one way to put it, genocide. That is a destruction of our people, destruction of our genes that's leading us to become a tiny minority in our own countries and then eventually be extinguished by this flood of humanity that's being ushered into our countries. The point I always make in this program is that the problem with immigration is not just from the immigrants. It's not just from the invaders. There's always, in the history of the world, been invaders ready to invade another country for their own advantage, monetary or power or empire or whatever. The real issue in Europe today is not the strength of our enemies, the military strength, the absolute power that we have in that sense could repel any foreign invaders or any foreign invasion. And if a country tried to, in fact, do things to us, whether it be nuclear or chemical or biological weapons, Europe has the power literally to make that country a parking lot if they wanted to. So if Europe had the will to state this is what our position is, we're not going to allow this destruction. There's no question that any country that would still do this would be insane. Because they would face total annihilation of themselves. And I don't think too many people would want to do that. So it's really important to understand that as far as the invasion is concerned, yesterday we covered the birth rate. Now we're going to cover some of the invasion, that this has really been a problem, not so much of the invader. Yes, the invader is like the bullet being fired by a criminal into the hearts of our people. What's causing that criminal to be in our homeland, firing this bullet by their presence, so to speak, and this overwhelming majority in so-called democracies is because we have been rotted out from the inside. We've had a media that has basically taught Europeans to hate themselves. It's typified by that Weinstein Brothers film, I think. And by the way, the Weinstein Brothers are ardent Zionists. I can show you the major Jewish publications in Hollywood, where they point out that Weinstein is promoting billions of dollars to fight anti-Zionism and anti, quote, Semitism. I mean, they're literally promoting this, these organizations, with billions of dollars. And, of course, the way they think they're promoting anti-Semitism is by anti-Europeanism, whiteism, if you would have it. I mean, and it's typified by one of the biggest films that his studio did in the last couple of years, but there's many others that have similar themes about the evil of Europeans, was Django, which, of course, demonized white people. And it would be easy to demonize any people to say particular instances. There have been many white families that have been wiped out, for instance, by black criminals, tens of thousands of white women raped, not only in Europe, but America, by non-whites, and it would be easy to engender hatred on that basis. But these films engender demonization of white people. And then you have a black hero in his film called Django, who literally says, this is part of the film, he says, quote, kill white people and get paid for it. What's not to like? Now, imagine if that was turned around. Imagine if you can't even imagine any of the 10 largest Hollywood studios. And these are Hollywood and television studios worth billions of dollars, a combination of them worth trillions of dollars that really infect the world, infect Europe and the world with this anti-European mentality, this hatred, really. This is the true hate propaganda of the world. This is typified very much by a book where we have a Canadian friend of ours, a very courageous individual by the name of Arthur Toffin, who publicized and made it very clear to people that there is a book which was published way back before the Holocaust called Germany Must Perish by Theodor Kaufmann. Now, this book was written by a radical Jewish person, but this book was supported and promoted by the very highest of media in the Western world. There's no question the New York Times is the leading newspaper today of America and probably the newspaper of the world, really, in terms of a newspaper read all over the world. And the New York Times called this book, called Germany Must Perish, a plan for permanent peace among civilized nations. Now, what this book said, and you can read it, just read the introduction, it says a comprehensive plan for the destruction of the human nation and the total eradication of the German people from the world. I mean, absolute call for genocide. The Washington Post called this a provocative theory that it was interestingly presented. The Time magazine called it a sensational idea. That's the eradication from the earth of the German people. I mean, this is the German people of Goethe. This is the German people of Beethoven. This is the German people of so much art, literature, music, architecture, technology, medicine. We can go on and on. Let's just wipe them off the earth. The Philadelphia Record said, frankly, this book presents the dread background of the Nazi soul. So this was published actually in 1941, written really actually earlier than that, and this has been promoted. What Topman did in this case, and we have to honor this man actually, is he took that, put that book side by side, and just changed the wording. And so he wrote a book called Israel Must Perish, and then he exactly copies the introduction word for word, except where it said German, he switched it to Jews. And he said a total plan for the eradication of the Jews, you know, from the earth and destruction of Israel and blah, blah, blah. And he did that, of course, as a satire, as a way to expose the incredible hatred that was mainstream media in the United States of America and around the world. This is mainstream media. And by the way, this is also supported by every major Jewish organizations. There were no National Socialist organizations in the world that were promoting and calling for, in their publications, their books, their material, the extermination of the Jewish people from the earth. For publishing this book, Arthur Topman was tried in Canada, went through a long trial with so-called promoting hate material, hate literature or whatever. And this is one of the offenses he was prosecuted for publishing Israel Must Perish, or doing a copy of Germany Must Perish by a way of, he wasn't promoting the destruction of Jews. He was shocking people to say, imagine how you'd react to the destruction of Jews. I believe, and we will now go to Gemma Rudolph, that what we have in toto, there's many Europeans that are sick, but if you go back to the origins of the communist ideology and the spread of it, if you go back to the origins of anti-Europeanism, for instance, the Franz Boasian egalitarian theories, and also the incredible hate propaganda that's gone on all over the world, if you go back to the actual programs in individual countries to open our borders, you go right back to the most powerful organizations, for instance, in America is a perfect example, but they also existed throughout Europe. There was a very famous directive done by the Jews way back in the 20s, literally calling for multicultural Europe and the destruction of European the European racial entity, the European entity of our heritage in Europe. And this thing is still, there's still an organization that promotes this directive, which was written way back in the 1920s. It was a very much Jewish directive, and they celebrate this. And they didn't really have the great power to do that till really after the Second World War and the vanquishing of the German nation. But I believe this is what's going on. Well, let's go ahead and bring on, with that introduction, let's go ahead and bring on Gemma Rudolph, and we'll talk about some of the mechanisms of what's happening in Europe and how serious this issue is, and the tragedy that's occurring before our eyes, and how could any person who believes in human rights support literally the destruction of some of the most beautiful and creative and magnificent people the world's ever seen, and a great civilization that's given the earth so much advancement and so much beauty, both art, literature, music, architecture, science. It's really almost like a nightmare to think this is going on. Gamera, we'll start. Do you sometimes you think that you've kind of awakened in the middle of the night from a nightmare. Are we living almost a science fiction movie in terms of the destruction of our people?
First, let me say that I'm a little bit embarrassed by the way you have introduced me, because I think you're going a little bit over the top with the way you characterize me.
Well, I know that you're a modest man and a humble man, and I appreciate that. But I look at people like yourself who've suffered even imprisonment for standing up for the truth, and ultimately for standing up for the truth. You stood up for your people, your heritage. You stood up for all Europeans anywhere in the world. And I consider you really a great hero, and I don't think we should ever be shy of doing that. You know, the enemies, they make the heroes out of the kings. They make the heroes out of these Marxists. They make the heroes out of the people who promoted war in the Second World War that killed 54 million Europeans. And it's like, I think that it is time for our people to recognize our true heroes. And I know you're humble, but I believe you're one of the true heroes, a living hero who forms a great example for our people.
All right.
Okay. Sorry.
I didn't want to hear it repeated all over again.
Well, you're going to get it because our people have to celebrate our heroes, and you're a great example for people. And I know you're humble about it, but you are an example, and you still have not given up. You still talk and speak and do your blogs, and anyway, we want to listen to you now about your impressions of this nightmare and what's really happening in Europe today, and let's talk about some of the strategies we have to change this.
Right. Well, yes, referring to nightmares, actually, I wouldn't say they were outright nightmares, but I have woken up when this huge wave of Syrian immigrants was invited to Germany with all borders open. I thought this can't be true, and I had spent several almost sleepless nights over it. That is to say, I go to bed at 10, wake up at 2, with some dream about it, and then I lie there and can't go back to sleep because it's just causing me really, literally sleepless nights. But there's little I can do personally at this very moment. But I mean, here I am talking. That's all I can do. Give my comments, whatever they are worth, and hope that maybe this will move a little bit. Now, looking into yesterday, we spoke about the demographic vacuum that is being created in Europe and the reasons a little bit that are behind it, the defenselessness, the inability of mainstream politicians to do anything against it, even though they are aware of the problem, or the unwillingness even, because they don't care. Characteristic is when you look into how indigenous people are being treated all over the world, that there is extreme difference between people that come to mind as indigenous people, let's say the Inuit in northern Canada, or some natives in the jungles of Brazil. They are threatened in their identity and with their culture because they're getting overwhelmed with immigrants and with people foisting their own culture upon them. And there is a Human Rights Declaration for Indigenous People that was adopted by the United Nations in 2007, if I'm not mistaken, so not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is applied to these minorities. Always are talking about minorities. But I might say that indigenous people are all the people that live in Europe, the Germans in Germany, the English in England, the French in France, and so forth. And they face a threat similar to the people that the Human Rights Declaration for Indigenous People was originally meant for. That is to say, they get marginalized down the line if nothing changes. They will be marginalized. They will be a minority in their own country if things continue. And
ultimately a tiny minority, too. In other words, a lot of times people talk about us becoming a minority, but we've got to realize it's not going to start when it's under 50%. It will continue on until we are literally a tiny percentage, and basically the extinction of a great people.
So if I lobby for the human rights of indigenous people in the Brazilian jungle, I get big praises from the mainstream media and from lobby groups and from all non-governmental organizations. Now, if I do the same thing for the German people, for instance, my own people, lobby for stop of immigration, stop of destruction of culture, and reviving traditions, then I'm called a neo-Nazi. And everything stops. Because basically that's what that amounts to, even though... there is no factual link between trying to preserve or revive German traditions and Germanhood as such and National Socialism.
And what's the term they use for us? Every time they discuss someone who wants to preserve European heritage, European culture, you're a, quote, white supremacist.
White supremacist,
isn't that insane? You know, they don't call these Indians, you know, Indian supremacists or something if they want to preserve their culture.
I mean, of course, if you take the stand that Europeans are superior to all other people and deserve to be the ruling race of the world and are allowed to subjugate everyone else, then that would be supremacism, would be unacceptable. But that's not what people are calling for. They just want to be left alone. They want to preserve their own identity, both ethnically as well as culturally, and they're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to lobby for that. And this is just the outrage that's going on. And I, after having lived in this country... I see a similar thing going on here. There is general support and understanding for the black Americans creating their own black American history and culture and tradition and what have you and celebrate it, and also with the Hispanic community in this country. But doing the same thing on the same level for European Americans as such just simply is politically unacceptable. I mean, you can have some token events like St. Right. Patrick Days for the Irish, but that's, you know, it's partying. It has nothing to do with identity, really.
And don't forget about Jewish true supremacism that is celebrated. And if the Jew stands up for his culture, and they have thousands of organizations with billions of dollars of aid and support, according to Forward magazine, one of the leading Jewish magazines in America. And who are totally dedicated to Jewish survival, Jewish interests, Jewish advantage, Jewish power, Jewish privilege. And that's never discussed or never criticized by our Zio-controlled media.
Right, right. And, of course, lobbying against intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews. Now, if you did that between amongst whites, saying we lobby and we expect to be accepted by society – for whites not intermarrying with anyone else, all hell would break loose. Yeah.
By the way, Germer, did you hear about the huge national controversy they had about me and the congressman from Louisiana who's now an official in the Republican Party in the Congress named Steve Scalise? And it was revealed that he came to one of my meetings of Europe, which is the European American Unity and Rights Organization. In fact, the meeting was actually about trying to stop and prevent the Iraq war. But anyway, he came to my meeting because it was a European American rights organization, and he was totally condemned. He himself had to back down. He crawled on his hands and knees to the Black Caucus, which is an organization for black rights. And at the same time that all this was going on, the Democratic leader in the United States House of Representatives is a radical Jewish racist supremacist by the name of Barbara Schultz Wasserman. And we have a video of her. I'm going to do, in fact, this is one of the many videos I'm going to be working on. We have a video of her speaking at Hadassah, which is a worldwide Jewish group, literally condemning Jews that intermarry with Gentiles.
Right.
Of course, there's not been a word from the SPLC, which is a Jewish-run organization by Mr. Cohen. We had not a single word from the criticism of New York Times or Washington Post or ABC or NBC or CBS about that. So your point's well taken, and that's a perfect example of the incredible hypocrisy we have. And by the way, who's running the hypocrisy? Because why is it that really only Jews can escape this ultimate hypocrisy in terms of their – why is it only Israel allowed to increase the Jewish percentage – of the Israeli population with every census, whereas every Western nation in the world ends up having a lower percentage of Europeans in that nation because of the immigration policies and birth rates.
Right. Now, truth is, you could say, well, the white people just don't want to, and they are happy to intermarry and to live with a multicultural mix of hardly any identity. But truth is, hypocrisy amongst whites is just on the same scale, just the racial awareness, the tendency to marry one's own kin, which is a natural impulse. You can actually see that when you go to the major dating sites, and they used to have some stats on it, but you could actually, because I was in that business for a number of years before I got married, of course, looking for love. But it was interesting to see how whites behave if it's down to the real important things and if they are not watched or monitored. I feel they are not watched and monitored. So if you go to these big dating websites, whites date whites, and it's accepted and generally acknowledged that that's just what people want to do, and there's no problem there. And then you, of course, have votes by foot, by moving. Whites have the tendency to want to live in suburbs or in parts of towns where they're among themselves. Similar tendencies you have with Hispanics, we have with blacks, and we have with Asians, whatever.
Sure.
So it's quite natural because people just like to be with what they're familiar with and what they are know from how they grew up. So the propaganda that has instilled a behavior on the surface has not penetrated to the core of us, of most Europeans. European Americans are actually indigenous Europeans.
You think we have a natural tendency, obviously,
yes,
to want to associate with, want to preserve our kind. We'll be back with more Gemma Rudolph right after these words from the network. We've got to take this break. I wish we didn't, but we got to go forward. And we'll be back in just a minute, and Gemma Rudolph will continue on with his narrative.
There's got to be a morning after if we can hold on through the night. We have a chance to find the sunshine. Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's go right back to the Gemma Rudolph, who is giving us a very good look into, well, it's not a good look, I guess. It's a tragic look into the destruction of not only Germans, but European mankind, and it's going on in every Western country. Please go ahead, Gemma, and talk about any aspect of it you think that our listeners need to get some deeper understanding of.
Yes, I mentioned the natural impulse of Europeans and European Americans, indigenous Europeans and European Americans, are still there to want to be with their own kind and breed with their own kind and so forth. So I don't think Europeans are chopped liver, so to say, easy prey for the rest of the world. It's just a matter of organizing and creating a conscience and making people aware what the issue is. Now, yesterday we talked about the demographic vacuum that's being created, which inevitably will lead to immigration one way or another, in this case helped by propaganda and government actions. And what we have to talk about next is, I think, the spiritual vacuum that Europe and the United States is facing, particularly among the European American community. And what I mean with that was described just 2 days ago, actually, by the revisionist writer Michael Hoffman in an email that he sent around after the Paris terrorist attacks. He said that Islam is attacking Europe, trying to conquer Europe, not militarily as they tried after the Crusades up to the 17th century, but this time with a massive wave of immigration accompanied with militants and terrorist activities. And Christianity managed to fight off the first wave, or Christian Europe, I should say, the first wave that came ended roughly 500 years ago, mm-hmm. because it stood together and had its own spirit, its own Christian faith. And today, there is no such thing. The United States is still to a large degree religious, that is to say Christian, if you look at how many people go into churches, but even there, the membership of all churches, Christian churches in the United States, is in a free fall, and it's a matter of maybe a generation or two, and the churches will be mainly empty here in this country too. But Europe is a generation or two ahead of time. Churches in Europe are empty.
And the sad thing is, isn't it, that the Catholic Church in most of Europe is Catholic. There are certainly some elements, but the Catholic Church itself now has been basically programmed, so to speak, brainwashed, because, they grew up in this globalist Zio culture, this anti-European culture and this egalitarian culture and this destruction culture. So the church now, overall, not all members of the church, obviously, are literally actively supporting the destruction of Europe, even by non-Christians, against their own faith. I mean, the whole thing is insane. But
the Second Vatican,
the depth of the rot.
Yeah, the turning point for the Catholic Church, or for Christian churches in general, was the Second Vatican, when basically the Catholic Church recognized that all other religions can lead to salvation for human beings too. So they stepped down from the expectations that everybody who wants to go to heaven and wants to have eternal life has to be Christian, and nothing else leads to that salvation. And they have pretty much given up on that. And, of course, Christian religion itself comes with the dogma of help and feed and shelter the impoverished of the people of the world, and that, of course, opens the gates further. However, having said that, most Europeans are not active Christians anymore. I would even go even farther than that, most Europeans may consider themselves culturally a Christian, but dogmatically and by membership, they are not. And the secularization that has taken place in Europe has come to the point where I think it is to some degree, I consider it irreversible. Now, I don't know.
I think you're right there. As far as the way it goes with some of the mythos, the ideals of Christianity, this is definitely very few Europeans anymore, or what you call true believers. There's a lot of cultural Christians, but it doesn't seem that the true believers are. It's still a significant percentage, but a minority. But certainly, there's been a big change there. But I think that's also been the change as well by the change of culture, the change of who controls the cultural milieu of which even Catholic priests grow up in. They watch TV, movies, news, entertainment, and all the rest of it. And their value system has been affected, even if they're not even aware of it. Like, most Europeans aren't even aware of the fact that they've been programmed very differently than their grandparents were programmed.
Sure, but in general, even if it weren't for the one-sided indoctrination, the fact that we have a much higher degree of education among the population than we had 100 or 200 years ago. Michael Hoffman, for instance, he lobbies for people getting back to pre-Vatican II Christianity. So he's one of those Catholic fundamentalists. And I think trying to do that is like trying to get grown-ups to believe again in the Easter Bunny and in Santa Claus. It's just not going to work. They have come to a point where they look at the Bible as an ancient piece of writing that has long tradition, but it is written by human beings. And if you look at it not through the pink glasses of Christianity, but with just a critical, analytical look, just take it as a text. It's full of absurdities, contradictions, and impossibilities, and obviously wrong statements. It tries to explain how the world came into being. So the very first pages of the Bible, if somebody wants to ram that down my throat as saying this is true, and I have to say, well, then they're lying, because science has come to the point where pretty much every second word in the book of Genesis of the first pages is just simply wrong. So how are you going to get people back to...
Well, I think the stars, for instance, were created, you know, after the Earth was created. We even know that the light wouldn't even be seen on the Earth if that was the case. I mean, obviously, they were created, many of these stars, long before there ever was the existence of an Earth to even have the light get to us from so far away.
That's right. So how do you get people to sign up for something that's 2,000 years old when our scientific knowledge of the world was so much lower and ridiculously unreliable, and they all know better today? I mean, you could do that 200, 300 years ago when people didn't know, but it's just not going to work today. So you need to have something else that can spiritually unite people again and get them to sign up to a common cause that also appeals to emotions. Something new.
We'll talk about that, and we're going to talk about some of those, hopefully those cures for European mankind, and there's certainly a very definite place for those who are old line or traditional Christians and pre-Vatican II, as you said, and also other Protestant Christianity. But what are some of the other possibilities we have in terms of helping our people develop a spiritual will to their own survival? Back in a moment after these words.
There must be something worth living for. There must be something worth trying for. Even something's worth dying for. And if one man...
Hey, folks. I love that music. The reason why I use that music is because it says exactly the things that I believe in. It touches our spirit, our religiosity, really, that there are some things that are worth dying for, fighting for, living for. And what's more basic than that of your people? And I want to, by the way, welcome all the listeners from the Don Black Show. As you know, folks, he comes on 2 hours before ours. So if you're not listening to that show, you can also call in. We don't do call-ins here in our short period of time that we have. But definitely I encourage you to listen to the Don Black Show. And our good wishes go out to Don Black and Don Adbo and Jay and all the other people, Chuck Roy and all the other great people that do this show, as well as Paul Fromm from Canada. So let's go back to this narrative a little bit and talk about this, Gamer. Let me start off with a little glimpse of what I think maybe one of the mechanisms we can use to save ourselves. I believe that we are literally under a tyranny. Like David Brooks says in the New York Times, we've got a Jewish takeover of America. America also influences the world. We've had basically a Zio takeover, a Jewish takeover of the global media. We've had a Jewish takeover of academia in many ways. And that's not only been the American academia, but a great deal of that in UK, France, and around the world. And we have a tyranny over us. I believe one of the things we can do is just what I call to use a little gamma. I call it like a psychological jiu-jitsu. You know, a lot of the people of the West, and we can talk about conservatives and liberals, and there's a very different obviously, is a dichotomy there between what they believe. Conservatives are more prone to say, yeah, we're going to fight for our own and be patriotic. Liberals, our leftists, tend to be more the idea we have to have human rights for all people. But the truth is that, you know, I think that they've got a real Achilles heel in the fact that, as you mentioned earlier with the Tibetans, anybody of the left that's rational, or for that matter the right that's rational, has to understand that Europeans have a right to live, and that genocide is evil no matter who it's done to. But even better than that, it's very easy because the fact is so clear, and a lot of the leftists as well as conservatives are beginning to realize the Zionist control of our foreign policy, of our media, the crimes of Israel, the war, the incredible horrific wars, the terrorism. This terrorism in France is a result of the Jewish state ultimately and the policies of the Jewish state in the Middle East, even the rise of this radical Islam, which has been in many ways facilitated and promoted by these horrific crimes that under the Zionist control of our policies, for instance, in the Iraq war, we killed 1 million people there. We killed 1 million people in Afghanistan. You know, we have a Jewish troll, Madeleine Albright, getting up on media and saying the death of 500,000 children in Iraq is worth it, and it's proper, and it's great that we kill all these kids with our embargo. And this was long before the rise of ISIS, and this has fueled it. So maybe, Guillermo, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I believe that but what we've got to do is really take some of the stuff that they've instilled, this whole human rights issue and this issue against what we call true racial supremacism, which is ultimately really held by the Jews more than any other people on the earth. They not only want to have their Israel, they want to be supremacists. They want to control our media. They want to control our foreign policy. They want to control our banking. And that I think this is an opportunity, and I don't think we can ever bring our people back to saving our country until we overthrow the Jewish tyrants who rule over us. What are your thoughts on all that?
Right now I have a 5-year-old here who is asking me, please leave the room. Okay.
No problem. We understand. We're glad that you've got children around you. We need a lot more in the West.
Yeah, he's trying to climb on my lap and cuddle with me.
You
but that's not
your,
the right time.
Take your time and cuddle with him as you talk. That's fine. Maybe he'll inspire you and motivate you.
Yeah, well, I have no clear concept myself of how the problem can be solved, but I know, for instance, what cannot work. We have had many attempts of solving the issues in Europe by isolated, nationally limited groups. Say the British have the British National Party, the Germans have the National Democratic Party, and so forth. And all of them have failed for a number of reasons, not just because of propaganda, but because nationalism in Europe is not capable of giving the people an overarching European vision mm-hmm. of future. Europe has been involved in fratricidal wars for the past 2,000 years, and there are so many issues among neighbors in Europe, neighboring nations, that are considered unresolved from a nationalist point of view. They are rather fighting, for instance, when we talk about Germany and Poland, they are probably the two neighbors that have the biggest historical problems with each other. They are more concerned about how to solve them than to get together in one boat and solve the overarching threat to both of them of being pretty much extinguished from the face of the earth with the threat we've been talking about after Germany, which has the worst demographic collapse. Poland is a number two. So they're in the same boat. And nationalists will not be able to deal with this. So we need a European conscience, and this is going to be difficult, but I think...
So you're talking about a pan-Europeanism. So
pan-Europeanism that has to have American support for the very simple reason we have nowadays, I would say, half as many Europeans, ethnically speaking, living in America as we have in Europe themselves, but those living in America, they have given up and forgotten about the conflicts of their ancestors. So they have even intermarried Irish and Italian and French and German.
Right.
Everybody here looking at the ancestry, they have strands going back to various
nations. So Americans
nations.
Are kind of already pan-European, even
right.
though they don't really
they
know.
Have the potential. They are in their behavior, and they should be in their conscience, in their spirit, and they have an easier way of doing this and then giving that inspiration to the Europeans. Right now in Europe, there's this one group that's called Pegida or something to the effect that's the Europeans against the Islamization of the Occident. And that's, of course, only a negative point in their agenda. That's not enough. We need something positive to identify with on a European level that overcomes
right.
this division amongst Europeans that keeps them in fighting each other rather than fighting common threats.
You think that understanding, for instance, the global Jewish role, the fact that these Jews are in every country of Europe, every country of the West, in many countries of the world for that matter, and they have a global media – that they are united in their efforts to essentially destroy us and rule over us, and they're literally, you know, they've led Bolshevism, they've led Zionism, they've led the mass media, which has promoted every sort of destructive behavior among our people, including this hedonism, this sexual license and degeneracy, the drug use among our kids, the incredibly culturally destructive cultural Bolshevism and so forth that's pushing among our kids. Isn't this a good possible way for Europeans to understand their unity, and that when they recognize that there are these tyrants that are global across Europe, and that there's no way we're going to be able to defeat this power, this force, unless we are united, in the sense we can still want to preserve our own unique cultures, and we should, our own languages, our traditions, and all that. But at the same time, isn't the fact we have a global enemy that's trying to destroy us, isn't this a good basic spiritual motivation for us to be more unified?
Yes. History teaches us many lessons of foreign powers, external powers, pitting Europeans against Europeans in the First World War and the Second World War. And in both cases, Zionist and Jewish lobby groups have played a major role, but they weren't the only ones. I mean, Britain has followed a policy of pitting continental Europeans against each other for their own imperial reasons. The U.S. and Soviet Russia have done that in order to conquer and dominate Europe. So Europeans have to understand this historical role of foreign powers and the Jewish role in it, to come to understand that the enmities they have against each other is frequently caused by not themselves, but from the outside.
Well, we know the Jewish role in the Second World War, right? Exacerbating both sides, telling the Poles, for instance, that America, the Jews in America told the Poles, literally through Roosevelt, that if they fight the Germans, that America is going to rush to their aid immediately. That's what Roosevelt, under the Jewish control, sent to the Poles. And, of course, the media called for war since the rise of the NSDAP in Germany. Also, the control in the West kept any peace proposals from being listened to and heard, and stopping this horrific genocide. Do you think Europeans can also kind of learn this in a way by looking at how the Jewish extremists worldwide have tried to do the same thing in Syria, to get all these groups to fight one another? They did the same thing, of course, in Lebanon, to get the Christians and the Islamics to fight one another. Do you think that's one way, too, to kind of open their eyes to this question?
Absolutely correct. I mean, the whole upheaval we have in the Middle East nowadays, as I mentioned yesterday, the project of the New American Century that is driven by Zionist Jewish ideologists at the very top of this American and Israeli elite. And that is most certainly part and parcel of the historical lessons still in the making, so to say, that we have to learn to understand what's going on in the world, and to immunize ourselves against any future attempt of divided empire, of divide and conquer, or divide and rule.
Okay. Well, that's it. That's a swan song. And I tell you what, again, we always seem to not have enough time, but we had a fantastic discussion today. And I know you need to spend time with that house full of kids, but we won't do it right away, but maybe the end of next week or something, we'll have you on again, because I like your analysis and your incredible kind of understanding of this issue from a more of a global perspective, as a person who's lived both in Europe and America. So thank you so much, Gamer, and just keep up your great work and analysis, and we'll be happy to read you. Where can people contact you with your blog?
GamerRudolph.com.
Thank you so much, Gamer, and good luck to you, and good luck with the kids today, and we'll be talking to you hopefully in the next week.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay, folks, that's it. What an incredible show, and what a deep one. These are the kind of deep understandings that we have if we're going to save our people. And I do believe that even understanding the Jewish question is kind of a basis for understanding why we have to stand up. It's the old age-old quest for freedom from tyranny, and freedom from an oppressive invader, a destroyer who's trying to destroy our people. In this danger, we have a chance for unity again, and we have a chance to save our people. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think exploring the Jewish question, the Jewish role in all this, is so vital for the salvation of our people. In fact, I think it's absolutely essential. Love you all. Be back again tomorrow. Keep on thinking free. Keep on standing up. Never give up. Millions are coming to us all over the world steadily. I think ultimately we're going to wake up, grab our destiny in the fists of our hands, and guide ourselves to our survival, and actually guide ourselves someday to the stars. Love you all. Be back again tomorrow.